Hi, and welcome to Coming to Be. My name is Bashir Hanif Ali. I am the host and executive producer of the show. We are here today with one of my favorite guests. We had him here a few weeks ago. We're here to do a part two to a show that was just full of so much content that we really had no choice other than to do a part two. But just to quickly rehash, our guest today has, you know, started out with, you know, just overcoming hurdles like so many of us had to in the beginning of his life, with, you know, drug addiction and some incarceration, and I'll let him explain more of that to you. But what we're here to celebrate are the triumphs that he has had since he has overcome those hurdles, and to explain to the audience that we can really play by the rules and succeed in life at the same time, you know. And that's really the whole purpose behind the show Coming to Be, is that we want to show people that you can play by the rules and we can still get ahead in this thing called life. So that's real quickly to mention just some of his credentials, which are just ridiculous, over the top. Started out with an associate's degree in human services, has a bachelor's degree in human services, multi-credentialed in substance abuse, certified drug and alcohol counselor, certified clinical supervisor, certified family recovery specialist. And I just recently found out from our research department today that he has a citation from the Pennsylvania House of Representatives, a certificate of merit in New York State Assembly, acknowledged for his distinguished work in the field of addiction by New York as well as Pennsylvania, and has the first licensed recovery house, which was acknowledged by Representative Madden in the state of Pennsylvania as well. Please help me in welcoming my guest for today, part two, Mr. Kenneth Ramirez.
Hey, what's up, Bashir? It's a pleasure to be
always
here.
Always a pleasure to see
Thank
you, man.
Thank you. Good seeing you.
Always a pleasure to see you. I'm just going to assume that folks seen part one, and so just to kind of really quickly rehash, we talked about the fact that, you know, with the addiction issues mm-hmm. that you went through in your early childhood and adolescence and stuff like that,
right?
Finding yourself incarcerated as a result of a drug-related crime. I think it was mm-hmm. robbing a cab driver for $30. Yeah, and we got into all of that on the first
right.
show. And it really began to get somewhat spiritual in nature once we began to talk about the two police officers that turned the corner.
The angels.
The angels. And, you know, I can tell when something transitions from physical to spiritual. It just feels different.
Right.
And just like when you talked about the cart guy. You know, I've probably been to the supermarket two or three times since the first interview.
Did you check them out?
I go out my way. In fact, one time I had a conversation with the cart guy.
That's
we
right.
were standing there, we were just talking. It was a good conversation, actually. But to pick up from where we left off at, the recovery house, and I believe the name of it is We Have a Choice?
Yes, We Have a Choice, Recovery House for Men. AKA Justin's house. Okay. Justin was my brother-in-law, my wife's brother. He overdosed and died from a fentanyl overdose in Long Island 3 years ago in Suffolk County, New York. So we had the recovery house for about 8 years now. We got licensed in 2020, but we had started it up prior to DDAP. Initiating a licensing in the state of Pennsylvania for recovery houses. So when Justin overdosed, our family, we came together and decided, you know, let's dedicate, you know, our service work and our efforts to Justin, and we named it Justin's house from that point forward.
Okay.
Yeah.
How many beds are in the house?
Eight beds.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. You should be very proud of yourself.
Thank you. Thank
yeah.
you. I am.
Yeah.
I am. I get an opportunity to do service, man. You know, like, we never know what's going to happen as far as somebody's commitment when they walk through the door. But what we do know is that we provide every opportunity
right.
for them to have a safe place to recover.
Right.
You know, whether it's a day or 6 months, whatever it is, you know, why they're in our recovery house, we do everything we can to provide.
So if they come with the desire, you provide an environment for that desire to be fulfilled and flourish. And
yes,
like
if they don't come with a desire, we still provide the safe environment, and hopefully they'll see the opportunity from some of the other people that's there that's striving to want to explore what's going on and stay and use that benefit to better themselves.
Right, right. So, because one of the things that I want to always talk about on the show is, you know, it's very easy to say I was doing this and now all of a sudden I'm accomplished this. And
right.
You know, but there's things that happen in the middle.
That's right.
You know what I mean? And there had to be some challenges to opening up this recovery house.
Absolutely.
In reading your credentials, you were the first licensed one, so that couldn't have been an easy process.
No, it wasn't.
So explain to the audience a little bit of some of the, because it started out as an idea.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Which lends itself to the fact that everything that manifests itself physically starts off in the spirit as an idea.
Absolutely.
So you had an idea, and how did you bring that idea to fruition?
Well, I'll tell you, man, working as an addiction counselor for the last 14 years and working in different programs. I've worked in programs in New York State. I've worked in several programs in Pennsylvania. And, you know, just learning how programs are ran, I paid attention. You know, and I've always remained a sponge, you know, because I'm always looking to learn and grow and develop and learn new things and try new things. And I've seen a lot of things in programs that wasn't ethical, things that kind of rubbed my spirit the wrong way. Mm. And I said, you know, if I had the opportunity to make a difference one day, I'm going for it. You know, because I really believe that I know how to run a program, you know, just based on all of my collective experience. So one day I'm sitting at the dinner table with my wife and my mother-in-law, who I recently lost my father-in-law. He had transitioned. And my mother-in-law says, "Kenny, why don't you look for a house?" And I'm looking at, I said, we're in the house. She said, "No, you know, I know that your dream has always been to want to open up your own program." And I said, "Well, how are we going to do that?" You know, she said, "Well, you know, Pop left me a little bit of money, and I just don't want to blow it. I want to do something purposeful with it."
Wow.
And, you know, she said, "I believe in you, son, and everything that you've done and that you're doing. And I wanna help give you that opportunity and be a part of it with you." And
That's your mother-in-law.
My mother-in-law.
Wow, not your mother, mother-in-law.
My mother-in-law.
That's deep.
At the dinner table. And I was just like I was just like overwhelmed. Like I didn't really know what to do, because now like the opportunity, you know, my experience has been like opportunities could still cause some fear a little bit.
Sure.
You know, because now I'm like, wow, this is really happening.
Right.
You know,
right.
I've been dreaming about this, thinking about this, but now I have the opportunity to actually do it, because now I know it's some work involved.
Right.
It's some work involved.
Probably second guessing yourself and like,
oh yeah.
It's easy to have a dream.
Right.
But, you know, to bring that dream to fruition in reality.
Right. Okay, Kenny, here's the opportunity. And I think I cried at the dinner table when she said that, because I knew she was serious.
Yeah.
You know, and a few days later, I started looking for a house, man. And we found a house in our community, and it was condemned. And I remember when I first seen the house, it was on the auction site and it was condemned, man.
Like boarded up?
Inhabited, boarded up. And I seen it, and like God gave me the vision. God gave me the vision. I just felt it. Even, you know, it was a diamond in the rough, right? Like, the normal eye would have probably driven past that house and said, "Oh man, I got to look for something, you know, that's fancy." And my heart said, "This is the house." My spirit said, "This is the house." So then I went and got my mother-in-law and I drove her to see the house. And when we pulled up to that house, she said, "You got to be out your mind." Like, she wasn't going for it. I said, "Ma, I'm telling you, this is the house. I know how it looks on the outside." I mean, it didn't even have a septic tank. Like, the septic tank was caved in. The water wasn't running. It was a nightmare. And we prayed. You know, we prayed. We went back home and we talked to my wife. And we all went to see it after that with the kids. You know, and we prayed and we said, "Okay." And we started doing some work on the house. It took about a year to get it to where we needed to be.
Sure.
And
I can only imagine that there are some, because of what you were going to use it for,
mm-hmm.
there were some codes that had to be met, and maybe fire codes or
absolutely
smoke detectors.
So I tell you, like, I didn't really know anything about those parts of it. So we fixed the house up and I said, "We're gonna do a good thing. We're gonna help people. We live in this community and we're gonna just start help saving some lives," you know? Uh-huh. And I remember we just opened it up one day and we started putting posts out saying that we have a sober house and you know, a recovery house. And
so there was no DDAP, no state of Pennsylvania approval, nothing.
Nothing.
Just, "We got a nice house, you can live here and
that's right.
try to stay clean, go to some meetings or whatever."
And I tell you, man, like, being a counselor, right? Like, I thought it was gonna be an easy task because of all of the facilities and connections that I've worked with and things. And I remember getting like 5,000 flyers made up and I mailed one probably to every facility in Pennsylvania and nobody called. And I think our first 4 to 6 months, we just had 8 empty beds in the house and nobody was calling. And I started to get discouraged. And God just kept talking to my spirit saying, "Just be patient." And, you know, like, I felt like it was, like, I understood the assignment. And I just stayed faithful, man. And, you know, somewhere between 4 and 6 months, we got our first phone call. And a guy came in. And, you know, that guy happened to become our house manager a few months after he moved in. And, you know, the local news in the Poconos found out about us. And I said, "You know what, why don't we just do an open house?" And we did an open house and we invited the news down and the state representative, Maureen Madden. And
they showed up.
They showed up. And I says, "You know, we're trying to do something good for our community in Monroe County and we need support. We want to help people. And we did this all on our own and we need your support." And they showed up. And about 3 or 4 days later, we received a letter from the township saying, "We seen your article, but you need a license to do this."
Uh-huh. Come on, give me the details. That's because this is what I want people to realize, the work that's involved in accomplishing some stuff.
And I didn't know that we needed any of that. Again, I came into it naive. I just wanted to help people, you know?
Right.
And they sent us the requirements and I went down to the township in Coolbar Township and they were very supportive of us. And you know, they issued us the permit, you know, and they said, "Continue to do great work." And I'm very grateful for them giving us that opportunity. The DDAP process came about 2 years after that, when they implemented the 717 regulations for recovery houses.
What is that?
717 regulations is a set of guidelines and regulations that the Pennsylvania Department of Drug and Alcohol Programs developed to be able to monitor and license and regulate recovery homes to help keep vulnerable individuals safe, because a lot of people could just open a house up and say, "Oh, I'm a sober home. Oh, I'm a recovery home." But they're, you know, they're using drugs in there, they're selling drugs, They're
taking, I've heard stories.
Absolutely. I've been in a few when I was in the system. Yes, I've been in houses like that. So I also use that experience, my personal experience of what kind of vision and home I wanted to welcome people into, having some of my own horrific experiences going through houses where there was guys smoking crack, no house manager, just nightmares. You know, they weren't safe. So, you know, when DDAP initiated the 717 regulations, it's really to protect the vulnerable person, the client. Right. You know, you have people opening up houses. They was taking clients' food stamps, taking their SSI checks, you know, not buying them any food, just mistreating them.
Right, because they're coming through the door in desperation and vulnerable.
Yes.
And here they are finally, you know, probably saying to themselves, I finally reached the point where I want some help.
That's right.
And they walk through the door and they're taken advantage of.
And they're taken advantage of. So as soon as I seen that DDAP implemented 717 regulations, I said, I want to do this. Because one, I'm a person that likes to be accountable. And two, we don't have anything to hide. And three, we're going to really help people. So I sat at my kitchen table for about 9 months. Mm-hmm. Writing policies and procedures, a whole bunch of them that was required to get licensed. And a lot of the times I felt like I did it with a blindfold over my eyes and I was just kind of finding my way through a dark room. And but I just continued to have faith and I asked a lot of questions and I just continued to do everything that was asked of me and required from me. And that turned into us being the first licensed house in Pennsylvania.
Wow. There have been others subsequent to yours?
Yes. Okay. Well, it's probably about over 200 licensed recovery homes in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania now.
Wow.
I'm still the only licensed recovery home in Monroe County, Pennsylvania, though, to this day.
Wow. Wow. Something to really be proud of.
Yeah, it's a great accomplishment, you know, something sure. I never dreamed possible,
right.
You know, not way back when.
Right, because I bet when them two cops came around the corner and you were sitting there drinking that warm beer.
50 cent can of warm beer, hot.
I bet you wasn't saying to yourself, you know, one day I'm going to have a recovery house in Pennsylvania.
No, I wasn't. And, you know, some days when I go to my recovery house and I'm sitting on a porch with the guys and we're just talking, like I sit there and I share that with them. And like, I cry sometimes because I went from a place of being in these places and institutionalized, you know, over 30 years of my life, whether it was going in and out of jail or going in and out of programs. You know, my story consists of 8 or 9 detoxes, 10 inpatient residential treatment stays, 3 long-term program stays, 12 months, 18 months, 12 months again, you know, to being able to sit on the porch of my own recovery house and help other people go through the process of getting better.
While simultaneously achieving the credentials.
That's right.
That, because let's face it, you could have as many of great ideas as you want, but to go to that next stage and that next stage, because every stage requires a credential.
Yes, it does.
You know what I mean? I remember when I first met you, you weren't doing what you were doing now, and I used mm-hmm. to refer, still do, refer to you as a brother on the move, because I saw it. Now, I didn't see the details. You know, I mean, I'm a human being. I don't foresee details. But I tell you what I did see. I saw he's not going to stay here. That I was sure of. That where we were at that time
right.
was not where we was going to stay.
Thank
right?
you.
And it's funny because I saw it in you more than I can see it in myself. Now, people would say to me at that time that they saw this thing in me.
Yeah.
That I was going to, you know, whatever, not stay where I was at. And you, because it's hard to see yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And again, we don't get the details, but we do get the realization of this guy is not going to be in this situation much longer. He's gonna be moving. But there's a flip side to that.
Mm-hmm.
The flip side to that, and I know you, I've actually seen you experience it, and I've had several experiences with it. When the people that we report to, so let's say you're a, whatever your title is, but you report to a director or whatever the case might be, they also see that you're a brother on the move. Sometimes they're encouraging and helpful.
Sometimes they're not.
They're not.
Right. And they're I've experienced that.
I've seen it. I was there. And so now you have the challenge of trying to achieve these goals and stuff that you have in your head. And on in addition to that, I got this flim-flam over here messing with me.
For no reason
for
at
no
all.
For no reason at all, other than just pure hating. But as they say, a hater's job is what? To hate.
Mm-hmm.
So he's just doing his job, or she's just doing his job, right? So that's their job, to hate. And but because we have favor, blessings, whatever word you're comfortable with,
all of them,
we have something, not that others don't have, but we have something that we're aware of that others aren't aware that they have. I don't believe that my creator, my God, my higher power, whatever word you're good with, gave me more than he gave you or anybody else.
Right.
But I do believe that some of us are more in touch with the fact that there's something beyond me working with me.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
I do.
I never forget, I was watching an interview with, there was a documentary on Muhammad Ali. I've seen so many documentaries on Muhammad Ali. And it was a fight with, one of the fights that he had with Joe Frazier. And I believe he got his jaw broke. And Angelo Dundee said to him, why didn't you just go down?
Mm-hmm.
Why didn't you just go down? And he said to Angelo, he said, I wanted to, but something wouldn't let me.
Something wouldn't let me. That's the
so what he was saying was the humanness in him did want to go down. Like, yo, that didn't hurt. You know what I'm saying? He's human just like anybody else. But there was something within him that said,
keep
no,
going.
We're going to keep going.
That's right.
And that's what makes champions in sports, in addiction, in recovery, in business, in whatever it is. When you are aware that you have that thing working in you, everybody else got it too. But you're aware of it, and you've kind of matured into a way of navigating with it.
Mm-hmm.
You just have that ability to take that next step that the other person doesn't have. That's it. They quit. And although you may feel like quitting, you get up and you just do it again. And you do that, and after a few years of that, you realize you're here, and that person's still way back here.
Right.
Because you've been taking that one step, that keep going attitude and spirit that frankly will separate you from the rest.
I read something that said, you know, who can endure with a broken spirit? Mm-hmm. But even through times of physical illness, if the spirit is strong, the body will continue to endure.
Believe that. Believe that. In fact, when people are sick in the hospital, right? So you go to see them and somebody say, oh, you went to see such and such yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
And you say, yeah, they were in good spirits.
Right.
That's the best thing you can say.
Yes, it is.
They were in good spirits. So whether it be the cancer or whatever it is, it's still there.
But they were in good spirits.
But they were in good spirits, which means they still rocking and rolling.
That's right.
You know what I'm saying? Listen, if you got a good appetite and a good spirit,
you straight.
You straight. You don't need a whole lot more than that. Yeah.
I
go ahead.
I you know, just looking back on, like, you touched on a lot of real good things, man. Like some of the barriers, you know, unforeseen, some of the barriers that are placed intentionally, like in some people's paths when they're trying to achieve certain things. Like, none of this stuff is easy. And what I'm finding out for me with my assignment that God has given me is I'm starting to accept that maybe it's not supposed to be easy, right? Mm. And that's coming over time. And you know, with as I'm gaining more wisdom and maturity with life, and you know, a lot of the times I really don't understand things until after I've gone through them and look back on them in hindsight, right? That place that you talked about that we were at some years ago, I had a supervisor there. And I remember coming across a new credential that was being offered in Pennsylvania. It was the Recovery Support Specialist certification offered by PCB. That's the Pennsylvania Certification Board. Now, at that time, when they introduced that new credential, I already had my associate counseling credential. Mm-hmm. So I wasn't, I had my full counseling credential. And I said, you know what? Something prompted me to want to go get the CRS credential too. And the supervisor and director at that time at that program both laughed at me and told me, you're wasting your time going to get that CRS credential. You're a counselor. Why are you wasting your time? Now, if I didn't have that spirit of getting knocked down and keep going, I might have just listened to them. But my spirit still prompted me to go get that credential. Because what it does for me is there's only certain parameters that I'm allowed to work with a client under the guidelines of addiction counselor. CRS credential is more of a peer-to-peer engagement. So what I did was I went and got multi-credential because it provided more opportunities for me to do service and to help people in different capacities. That same credential, without even knowing at the time, almost 10 years later, put me in position to be able to open up my own program and provide CRS services in my program because I have the qualifications in my own program. Mm. Now, if I were to listen to my former supervisor and director at that time, who both laughed at me when I said I wanted that credential, I wouldn't be able to provide those services at my own place of business at this time because I would have listened to them and just said, whatever, I'm not going to get it. So what I've learned from that experience is it's important for us to be mindful of the people that we have around us. I believe that everybody needs a cheerleader, people who's going to encourage and motivate them, right? Because you know, I heard someone use an analogy a long time ago. They said, even Muhammad Ali, right? Any professional fighter that's really good, they have three things in their corner. Mm. They have a stool to sit on so they could get some rest. They have some water that they splash on them to hydrate, maybe gargle a little, spit the water out. And they have a cut man. All of us need a cut man in the corner. So when we engage in these things and these life throws these things at us and people are trying to knock us down and we're taking the bruises and the bumps, we go to our cut men and our cheerleaders and they put us back together. Mm-hmm. They get us ready for the next round.
Good. Give them game. Teach them the game.
Right?
Teach them the game.
They get us ready for the next round because the truth is life ain't easy. Right? So over time, I've learned to keep some good cut men around me. Because I've accepted that my assignment from God consists of me going out into the battlefield.
Right. And you're going to need periods of rest and water and recovery.
That's right.
whether it's ice on the eye or a stitch on the lip or whatever it might be.
Or bubble bath.
Right.
Self-care.
Or all of the above.
Right.
Right? Yeah. It's interesting. We've used so many boxing analogies. I heard Floyd Mayweather not long ago, he said, if you have a dream, mm-hmm. you better get a team.
There you go.
No team, no
dream.
No dream. Or you just be dreaming, you know? Even here with the show, you know, this isn't something that I thought of, like, you know what, I think I'm going to have a podcast and get viewers and blah, 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 blah.
Right.
I had to go inside.
Of course.
Right? And then I had to have people that also knew how to go inside support me. Because if not for Billy with the camera and my spiritual advisor behind me, my wife supporting
me. That's
right. Like, if I didn't have the team in place, I couldn't do it.
It's important.
Yeah. I mean, this thing started out with an idea, like the cameras and the tripods and the, like, there was no money for this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? But we just kept pushing. We just kept pushing and pushing and it because if it's supposed to be, it's going to be.
It's going to happen.
It's going to be. But, you know, the labor is the beauty. We're so trained in this country to look for the manifestation of the work. But the reality is the beauty really is in the work itself.
The process is the outcome.
The process is the outcome. And this is really the heartbeat behind, this is why I have you on the show. I'm not trying to show like, this is a brother that went from getting arrested and now he's doing good and, you know, has this and has that. That's not what I'm trying to do. There's already enough shows mm-hmm. showing people, not just brothers or black people or athletes or rappers or none of that. There's already enough shows that's showing the instant gratification
mm-hmm.
that is a falsehood.
Yes, it is.
In life. The truth of the matter is that life is hard and we need a manager or a teacher or a sponsor or an advisor or someone that's just a little further out in the water than we are
mm-hmm.
so that when we lose our footing, they can say, listen,
come on, I got you.
I got you. Now, you know, I believe in miracles. So I guess there is the possibility of like, you don't have that person and somehow you just made it anyway. Like,
sure.
Oh, thank goodness, you know. But statistically speaking, you want to have that person.
Of course.
You know what I'm saying? Like, you had your mother-in-law. You know what I'm saying? I met you along the way. That the whole thing with the brother on the move, like, that just came out my mouth. But we've been on that
for years.
For years.
Yes. Yeah. And thank you for that, because it inspired me and it motivates me to today.
I remember where we were at when the first time I said it, up in my little office on top of that little raggedy house at that place where we was working.
Yes, we was. You did.
Right?
Yes, we were.
Yeah. And, you know, it's funny because when we were there, people would always say to me, you should be running this place. My name wasn't Bashir at the time, right? But they would say, like, you should be running this whole place. And I'd be like, man, you crazy.
You were. You just didn't have the title. You were running a place.
Because I would walk in with the executive director, like walk into like the dining room or something, and people would approach me. I would feel so bad. I was
right.
Like, yeah, you gotta talk to him, kind of thing. But I had that air about me.
Yes.
Already. It just hadn't manifested itself yet
mm-hmm.
in the form of the title sort of thing. But the benefit of spending time at that level is that now, A, I stay in a posture of gratitude,
mm-hmm.
and the biggest thing is, yeah, I know how to talk to people.
That's important.
I know how to talk to people. I know how to talk to all kinds of people, man. Like, I could work for you, you could be one of my clients, or you could work for me. Like, there's a level of consistency consistent, what's the word I'm looking for? A bit, like just on a human level, like I'm not talking up to you, I'm not talking down to you, like I see you the same way I see myself. I don't care if I make $300,000 a year and you make $20,000,
right.
We can still talk as people,
mm-hmm.
kind of thing. And because, listen, sincerity, believe it or not, like I, of all your credentials, your greatest credential is your sincerity. People are picking up on your sincerity through that camera that's pointed at you right now. That's how powerful sincerity is. They can tell, like, if you playing, or if like he's serious. He really doing this thing. He mean what he say. It's an energy. It's a verb.
It's an energy. Yeah.
Yeah. And people
know game when they see it.
They know game.
And they know real when they see it.
And they know real. Particularly real knows real and game knows game.
Absolutely.
You know, so I'm just so happy for you.
I appreciate it, Basha. You know, like some of the things, you know, we got some things on the table now that we're working on and trying to get through. You know, check this out, right? Like about 3 years ago, I said, you know, I want to bring more services to our organization. Mm-hmm. And I applied for it, and some of the governing bodies for the service that I was requesting for us to provide, they denied the application, and their reasoning for it in my county, our county, Monroe County, was that they didn't believe that there was a geographical need for it, being that two other providers were already providing the service. I said, so wait a minute. Are you saying that if one person walks through my door, they're not valuable enough to receive that service because two other people in the county are providing the service? First thing is, every life matters. So if you have a qualified individual who can provide a service to one person to help save that person's life a day at a time, why isn't that person's life as valuable as two other people or three other people that's in Stroudsburg? Last time I checked, it's five or six supermarkets in the same geographical area.
Right, that's right.
We're talking about human life here. So what I did was, having gone out and gained some of the tools that I need, like going to get an education, learning how to read different policies and literature, educating myself, equipping myself, right? I read some of the language that they sent me in the denial, and then I vetted the county area. And what I discovered was, is that the programs that they used in the denial that they identified as providing the service, and that was their reason for saying they didn't want to contract with me, those programs hadn't provided the service in over 8 months when they denied me. So really the denial was null and void because the service wasn't being provided. So their reasoning for my denial was invalid.
Mm-hmm.
So what I did was, is I submitted an appeal with their own language, with the evidence that the service wasn't being provided, and they had to overturn it. And now we're providing the service. And the reason I'm sharing that is because that was one of the obstacles that could have discouraged me and many others from advocating and going forward. But see, because a lot of people just say, oh, what the hell? All right.
Right.
I'm not gonna, right. I'll never have a chance, you know? And never be afraid to do what's right. You know, and I knew that every person deserves an opportunity. And if I'm able to provide that opportunity, I'm going to advocate for that because that's part of my assignment. And sometimes I find myself in discussions, conversations, appeals at government levels, county levels, and I bring truth, love, and honesty to everything that I do, right? And I trust the process based on the work that I do. Right? Because just maybe it's going to be one person in the room who's in position to make a difference or take the vote in a different direction that might just say, wait a minute. He says something, and I like us to look into this a little right. more. Right. But if you don't say nothing, if we don't say nothing, nothing will never happen.
That's right. That's right. That's right. I'm sitting here, because we're going to close momentarily, and I'm sitting here, and beyond just being so happy for you and impressed by you, brother, I listen. I like words, right? And your vocabulary is so
thank you, Bashet.
We from the dirt, man. We from the dirt. And we ain't dirty no more. Right? So it's just And in closing, to our listening audience particularly, I want to say, because I know that you're a man of faith.
Yes, I am.
And I have a pretty good idea of what your faith is and your level of involvement in that faith. But at the onset, because I have a faith too, right? And although they may be your faith, is different, that you go to a different house than I do, right? But our similarities far outweigh our differences.
Yes.
And I want people, one of the things I'm such an advocate for is, if you are a believer, I don't care how that belief expresses itself in you.
That's right.
You down with me if you're a believer, because The mechanics aren't what's important. I know that throughout this conversation, there's been times where you could have used some language that would have made it very clear to anyone listening where you go. And I could do the same thing. And we could get into the differences between what you do and what I do and right. what I believe and what you believe. And we would have spent 30, 45 minutes on nonsense. Instead of that, people that are truly spiritual in nature realize that we're really on the same journey.
That's right.
Now, if I like BMWs and you like Jaguars, listen, they're both nice cars. You just prefer Jaguar. So rock on with your Jaguar. There I'm gonna rock with my BMW, but we both doing better as a result. Because the only question that really exists is, how is it working for you? And if you can say what you do is working just fine for you, then you need to keep doing it.
Keep working.
I don't care what I or anyone else say.
That's right.
If it's working for you, if it's taking you from the dirt and the muck and mire to a place that's where we are now, you better keep doing
it. Keep doing it.
Don't even try to come over and do what I do. You keep doing what you doing.
That's
and
right.
I'm gonna keep doing what I'm doing. And we're gonna stay in love with one another. Because that's how that thing really worked, right?
You gave me this about 8 years ago. Mm. You said, Kenny, none of us found the way.
Right.
Just find a way that works for you. I heard that.
I remember that.
I remember it too.
I still say that to this day.
I sewn it into my heart when you gave that to me.
Yeah. Because once you think you found the way, you've automatically have shut down anyone else that doesn't do it your way. And that's really robbery of yourself.
Yes, it is.
You just robbed yourself.
Thank you for being one of my cup, man.
Yeah, man. I'm always in your corner, brother. So listen, that concludes another episode. Thank you, Kenny.
Thank you.
Thank you, Billy, for the audio visual, the camera thing that you do.
Thank you, Billy.
You're a master at it, man. You're a master of it. And we look forward to seeing y'all next time with our next guest. Be good.